Growth is hard to come by right now for most technology providers. That is just a fact. At the same time, new AI capabilities have the potential to radically change the way tech companies drive revenue growth, but only if sales organizations lean into new ways of doing business. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today, I'm going to be joined by Chris Albro and Chad O'Connor from PeopleAI. Both serve as SVP of sales for the company. And today, we'll be clicking into how AI has the potential to revolutionize sales organization. So let's get this insight engine humming here. Chad, Chris, welcome to Tectonic. And let's start with what roles did you play before you joined PeopleAI? And Chris, how about I start with you? What were you doing before PeopleAI?
Yeah. Hey, Thomas. First, thanks for having us. So for the past 10 years, it's called a decade, sales leadership roles. Pretty typical. I would say what's different with me is that prior to that, I actually did a bunch of stuff at the leadership level and individual contributor level in all other areas of the customer journey. So I've run professional services. I've done customer success. I managed pre-sales teams.
Okay.
That breadth of experience has helped me quite a bit engaging with customers.
So you're a sales guy, but not a hardcore sales guy because you went to the dark side of services and other areas before you came over to sales. So that's good to know. That balance, exactly. I think is actually important.
Yeah, now, and Chad's at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, it was him. So Chad, tell us about what you were doing before.
Again, thank you for having us. And I am at the other end of the spectrum. I started out selling copiers at Xerox door to door, and then moved over to software and worked for PTC. All those stories you heard about PTC in those days are like, those are the hardcore sales. And then went to Siebel Systems, Oracle for several years, to Coupa and other companies. I was definitely more the traditional
sales.
And then like Chris, we've both been doing leadership for the past 10 years.
Fantastic.
One of the things that's worked really well for us is, you know, Chad and I have a very unique combined role, if you will. And Chad and I, it's interesting, we've worked together for a long time. Mm-hmm. If you go all the way back to our joint experiences at Oracle, and then more recently, working together at a company called Outreach, and now at PeopleAI. So we work incredibly well together, and we've leveraged that here in terms of shared accountability, which is a really unique thing in the industry. Mm-hmm. But is working exceptionally well for us.
And I'm curious, since you have this dual structure here, how do you divide up responsibilities and sales across that? Is it by regions? Is it by product lines? How do you dice that?
In terms of like some HR responsibilities, we've divided some things up in terms of regions. But at the end of the day, and maybe this is actually a great transition into the conversation about AI here, AI has allowed us to work in ways that we previously hadn't even imagined, right?
Yeah.
Like, so for example, our visibility into deals and what's happening in deals is unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, either Chad or I can drop into an opportunity with a seller and work very effectively and very efficiently because we don't need to have done 10 weeks of one-on-ones talking about that deal with that seller.
Yeah, yeah.
We can see it all right there.
So a lot more versatility, a lot more flexibility from a management perspective. So that's interesting. And I want to start, I'm going to go jump over to you, Chad. So help the audience understand, what was the catalyst for the creation of the company, of PeopleAI?
Our core premise was really data first as a company around people interacting and talking to other people. We started back in 2016, and that's really where we excelled and thought there was really the special magic component to what we were doing.
Interesting. And then, you know, Chris, when I look at the website for the company, it says adopt a data-driven sales strategy. And that, you know, it's one of the reasons that I reached out to you guys. I wanted to get you on Tectonic is, you know, that's music to our ears at TSIA because we have been researching the emergence of data and model-driven revenue engines. We believe in that. Can you kind of overview the top three use cases PeopleAI is deploying within sales organizations to help them streamline revenue management?
Yeah, you bet. So despite the fact that my wife thinks I'm a rule follower, I'm not going to give you three. I'm going to give you four because that's
okay.
That's what we've been doing. We did a bunch of research. And we said sales organizations do four things in kind of a non-negotiable way. And what we call these things sales rituals, which sounds a little, you know, hokey, but we chose the word ritual for a very specific reason. And that is that it means it's something you do without fail, right? Good times, bad times, regardless of leadership, you're doing these four things in our opinion. One is coaching. Second is account planning and execution. Third is opportunity management, some methodology to manage opportunities. And then the fourth thing is forecasting. So there's the four sales rituals. And the more specific version of what we support is that the vast majority of organizations that I've worked with do these in a manual or ad hoc anecdotal way. And probably there's probably no better example of that than like the forecasting opportunity management ritual or use case. The typical use case there is I spend like, in fact, Chad and I were just talking about this morning. If I have seven reps, I do seven 45-minute one-on-ones every week. And in that one-on-one, I have about 15 questions I'm supposed to ask each rep about each opportunity. Okay. But think about like the number of things that just fit into that grid. There's hundreds of data points there. The human brain is not very good at that, barring a few exceptions. So there, the few people though that are good at that kind of processing, I'd suggest are probably better off in Vegas than they are in a sales leadership role. It turns out that data and AI is very good at stuff like that. And so that's probably the best example across the four rituals. The one like, we can basically automate a sales leader's ability to see into the pipeline really, really well.
Yeah. And, you know, I like the word ritual, but I also think the word I think about with sales organizations is tribal. Tribal knowledge, like, hey, this is the way I've always done it, right? Whether it's how I plan my accounts or how I do my forecast or whatever. And I think that, again, there's a huge opportunity here to bring data and models to bear on all of those four rituals, right? To just make sales managers, sales reps themselves much more productive. But as we watch AI sort of eat its way through workflows within tech companies, sales organizations are laggards here. There's no doubt about it. I think forecasting, you know, in our research, that's probably the most common use case. But if you look at where sales is compared to support or, you know, other areas, education services, it lags. And so I'm going to turn over to you, Chad. What are some of the most common misconceptions sales leaders have when they're thinking about how they're going to leverage AI? And how do you help them sort of overcome this and understand the potential power here?
So when you think about sales reps that are successful and sales leaders, there's kind of an art to them or this gut instinct they have.
Sure.
And when you think about it, it comes down, the first thing is kind of trust. No one trusts an AI data-driven answer. Folks have been doing it for so long. They think they're smarter. Their gut instinct is more correct, right? They have been doing it for years. And when you're successful, you kind of get an ego or just about you like, hey, I'm smarter than what a machine or AI or data can tell me. And so I think it's more of an emotional thing than a factual thing.
Thomas, if I can jump in, like a very close friend slash mentor of mine once told me that sales is the last function in a company. It's the only function where your boss can show up on a Monday and say, Chris, I want you to do something this way. Please go do it this way. And not only can you say no and then go do it your own way, you keep your job and you might actually be the highest paid employee in the company. So that's a very unique dynamic, right? The other really relevant experience I have here is that I actually spend most of my career in customer service. And customer service organizations are at the opposite end of the spectrum. Customer service team members don't get to show up every day and decide how they are going to log tickets or how they are going to resolve customer complaints, right? There is a process, there is an application, there is an operational rigor. Those two functions are at opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think because of that, you have to roll out AI in a very different way in those two functions.
Yeah, I mean, I completely on board that observation. And I think that, you know, sales organizations, again, there historically, there is a lot of art there. And I have personally a lot of respect for for good salespeople, right? I mean, you know, there's a lot of talent involved there, but, and I do believe that sales as a function is on the operating table in a way it has never been in tech ever. And people are looking for ways to really change the workflows, to get more efficiencies, et cetera. And I think there's a couple realities that are going to unfold. And I'm really curious how you guys are seeing this, you know, because you guys are helping these realities unfold. And one is, and you already put this on the table, AI data and models can process so much more than an individual salesperson can do. So when we talk about that gut that you were talking about, Chaz, like, hey, I know. Yeah, but there's no way as an individual rep, you can know all the factors that AI could bring into bear, right? Yeah. A model can sit there and say, hey, we're looking at financial information about that customer. We're looking at recent data in LinkedIn. We're looking at what's going on with their, I mean, we are looking at all these data streams to help prioritize what you should be pitching or who you should be talking to or prioritizing or whatever. An individual rep just can't do that. So that's number one. So if you're not leveraging these tools, you're handicapping yourself. The other thing is the fact that these tools take out, if you embrace them, tons of grunt work. I mean, you're talking about forecasting, Chris, right? I mean, forecasting is a pain in the ass if you're a rep. And if you can basically use a model now, right, to get you there. Account planning, building an account plan, it's a lot of grunt work, right? So if you're a rep and you're not leveraging these tools, you are spending a lot of time doing grunt work you shouldn't be doing, where you could be doing.
Thomas, are you? If you're applying for one of our open sales jobs, you got it.
Yeah. No, I'm. And the reason I bring you guys on is because I believe in the power. Not, you know, just not what you guys do, but the power of these tools in general to truly transform sales. Right. Okay. But and kind of what I'm chipping on here again is the fact that there is this resistance. Right. There is this ego and this art and these feelings. So let's talk a little bit more about how you help your customers break through that. What kind of tactics and what kind of things do you do to help get these sales organizations to get the light bulb to go off?
Yeah.
You've got a great term like process flow. So if you break down to simple process flow steps that they do in their day and they relate to, and then you combine, hey, here's how I can take out the manual part of those steps and rip it with really the data that you could never actually either collect or consume in, you know, in weeks.
Right.
And bring it into that process flow, the light bulb finally goes on. People are like, oh, I get it. But you got to simplify it down to these, the way they're working and how AI can come into that process. I think the other thing Chris and I try to do is we never mention the word AI.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, even though we're talking about it today, once you say AI, it has this connotation of, oh, I don't want to talk about that, right? Or I don't want to use that because you now are taking away their art, their gut instinct. But if you talk about data, how it can help, then it resonates.
I want to click into that sentiment that you just said there because it relates to a conversation I was in just earlier this week with an expert in the area of marketing. And I said, what percentage of the marketing organizations are you working with have really embraced AI to change their workflows? And she said, I think it's less than 15%. And, you know, I'm going to put this out there again to the audience, to what you just said there, Chad. If you're a professional and you hear the word AI and you have this sort of negative connotation, you're thinking, you know, that's going to kind of steal my value or I'm really not interested in that. I am going to make the assertion that you are screwing yourself. Because if you're a professional and you are not figuring out how to leverage AI in as many workflows as possible, you are not going to be an effective employee 3 years from now, period, full stop. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care how great of a salesperson you are or a marketer or a researcher. It doesn't matter. You have got to lean into this. It's shocking to me. It is a minority of professionals, not just sales. That light bulb hasn't gone on yet, you know, or gone off yet.
I'll go one step further. So I have a college-age son, and he just finished his freshman year. I asked him when he got home from his freshman year, I said, on a scale of 1 to 100, how often were your college professors talking about how AI is going to change the things that you're studying?
Yeah.
And he gave a single digit score. So I would say this goes, you know, we have a generation of college students that are not being properly, in my opinion, not being properly prepared for this stuff. So yeah, anyway, I agree with your premise though.
Yeah. So it's kind of pervasive right now. And again, if we drill back into just sales organizations and if people listening to this are in sales leaders trying to, again, move their sales teams, sort of dancing around, you know, AI. It's just like, hey, people have got to realize this is the way professionals are going to operate in the future. And they're going to be leveraging this. And again, you know, for creating my RFPs, for creating my account plans, for doing my forecast, for figuring out pricing. I mean, it's just the list goes. We've documented use case after use case for RevGen. They're there. They're real world now, but people have to leverage it. Every Tectonic listener is well aware. I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. Why don't we click into that? I mean, let's put a little more meat on the bone. If you guys can just talk about some like real world examples you've deployed with members that have changed the way they do a workflow, just crystallize that for the audience, some of the things that you folks have done.
Chris, I'm thinking about one of our customers that they're kind of laggers in the industry. Every week, they spend 3 to 4 hours on a Friday manually entering tasks, who they've talked to, what meetings they've had into their CRM system. Think about how crazy that is. In today's world, those things manually can be done and more accurately done. Because when you start entering in, you start bringing in emotion, you start bringing in a story, and or you're so frustrated that you just want to get it done. So you enter in just a few notes, but it's not complete enough to really actually help the whole go-to-market team pursued at the account.
Yeah. So Chad, I actually had a meeting this week. A company told me we're now paying our salespeople an extra $250 every week if they enter their data in Salesforce. So Thomas, I think this, by the way, goes, so now we're talking about data entry and people may be sitting there going, why are they talking about data entry? We're supposed to be talking about AI. Here's the linkage. One of the resistances that sellers have to using AI is that the AI they've been shown is operating on incomplete or non-existent data. And so it produces faulty results. And so then the sellers say, told you it wasn't very good. Told you my answer is better. That's comparing like apples to oranges, right? Like where the AI without data, of course, will be faulty. And so you have to get the underlying data right. And to Chad's point, we're now 3 decades into CRM and we're still at the point where the data is not there. Like that's crazy. So use case number one is we just automate. It's like this, you know, like shop vac, right? Like get all the data and put it into CRM. Now that sounds really simple, but there's a boring but very important part of that equation that has to do with what we call filtering and matching. If you're going to do that, if you're going to do the shop vac, there has to be a part of the system that filters out all non-business data. Okay. Secondly, there has to be a part of the mechanism that correctly matches an individual email or an individual meeting transcript or an individual calendar invite to the exact right opportunity in CRM. Keep in mind, many of these companies that we work with have 10, 12, 20 CRM instances across all their geos and business units. Again, there's a very boring but very important problem. Take a single email and you say, to which opportunities does this email apply? And then being able to propagate that into the right CRMs at the right opportunity level. Until companies get that right, the AI is going to struggle and the adoption is going to struggle because it's trying to do things with incomplete data.
Yeah, you know, this will echo some of the previous conversations we've had on this podcast, but I'll paint a picture here. If you think about any enterprise software out there with a knowledge worker using it, CRM being classic, they're sort of stupid data repositories and the data is kind of shitty. I mean, that's like the worst. That kind of sums it up. That is the reality. In every, you know, we talk about this at TSIA conferences, you know, how, you know, what's going on with AI, deploying, what's your issues, data, my data sucks, right? Just it's not there. And I believe after talking to enough experts on this, I think that AI is going to completely change the way we think about capturing data. And it's kind of what you're chipping on, Chris. It's not going to be the world where a sales rep has to pound this stuff in at the end of the week and they're making mistakes and they're forgetting to do it. And now we're trying to pay them to do it. It's just like, it's been a mess for 40 years and it's still a mess. AI is going to come in and basically suck data in a very automated way, both structured and unstructured, and give us way greater insights with that. That's, you know, where we're going to go. And I, you know, I'll give you this simple example of just how AI has revolutionized capturing information from customer calls. And, you know, there's a bunch of tools out there you can use. We have a tool we've had in place for about a year and a half, 2 years. It completely changes the ability to understand your interactions with a particular customer, because you don't have to rely on the one person who was on that call saying, oh yeah, they're super happy with us, or yeah, they're definitely going to buy this. AI gives you the transcript, tells you the sentiment. I mean, anybody in the company can look at it. It's a game changer. And that is just one use case. It's going to unfold again and again and again. So I think the way that we capture this information and are able to leverage it is going to look completely different in a couple of years. And I'm curious, you know, what your perspective is on that.
Well, I'm one of the people that believes it's probably not even going to take a couple of years. I mean, there might be organizations and leaders that try and slow it down so they have time to do the adoption, right? And By the way, I kind of support that and agree with that. Like, we got to get the adoption, the implementation right on this stuff. But it's interesting. Like, I think the challenge for leaders today is, I think about it, is you have to kind of operate in two different time zones, if you will. On the one hand, we're talking about, again, data, something that's taking us 3 decades and we still don't have it right go to market. And so in a way, to go forward, we have to go back and we have to pay for our sins of the past with regards to data. And leaders have a choice. It's a really simple choice. Do you want to keep beating your reps over the head to manually enter data? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to go find an automated AI-driven data solution? Okay. Those are the choices, right? But you have to go address that. Okay. And then what's going to happen is, once you address that, the pace at which companies that have chosen to address that, the pace at which they can move forward is mind-boggling.
Right.
Okay. And I'll give you, Thomas, I'll give you one example. And by the way, Chad's got great hair. I have a lot of gray hair. just one simple letter in those words.
You got the job, Chad. He's like, that guy looks good on camera.
I have gray hair. Chad has great hair. And but combined, we have enough decades of experience to be at least a little bit skeptical of all this AI stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're kind of like, as my kids say, old heads. And so we have a healthy degree of skepticism, despite the company and solutions we orient around. So I'll give you one example. We recently have made progress using what's called MCP, which is kind of a new AI thing that allows agents to talk to one another. Mm-hmm. And our team recently showed us, we're, by the way, really enamored with our capabilities, just our product, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you pair people AI's agentic AI capabilities with like an industry best in class reason model that's like really good at reasoning and performing complex sequences of tasks, the capability is pretty mind boggling. But to get there, you got to do the data thing. But once you do that, the pace at which a leader needs to be prepared to innovate and move forward, it's really impressive.
We watched two agents talking to each other and coming up with literally the best proposal, best account plan, pricing. I mean, almost anything you can think of, they're talking to each other, refining the answers in real time and using really any data that they can get their hands on to come back and present to you. I mean, it was absolutely amazing.
And it's coming fast.
It is coming fast.
Yeah. Again, I mean, I believe this very deeply. I mean, we started studying real world AI use cases 2.5 years ago, and I could find member after member who was getting just massive benefits in ROI, right? So again, it's real. I mean, this stuff, and it's just getting better and better and better. And I'm curious, you know, so one thing, again, I think if this audience, if it, you know, your sales leaders, your sales account executives out there, so think about this world where, again, pricing is going to be given to you in a model way. What things to emphasize, whether you're pitching could be, you know, all these things are going to be served up to you. How do you think that changes the skills of that frontline sales account executive? How should they be thinking about, you know, what, how am I going to be successful again in this new world? What's going to be different there? How would you coach it? Again, if I was just starting in sales and say, hey, Thomas, you know, this is what you should be focusing on, what would you be telling me?
So our vision here at People AI, Chad kind of referred to this in the opening question. Humans work with humans and AI does the rest. Okay. Mm-hmm. So 2 points. What should sellers be really good at going forward? They should be really, really good at working with humans, which sounds self-evident, but is not universally true, by the way. Like, there's a lot of skills development left on the table for sellers to be great at working with buyers. Two, just because AI is doing the things doesn't mean you don't have to know how the AI did the things. You're actually, in many scenarios, because humans will still work with humans, you're still going to have to be able to explain it, right? You're still going to have a conversation around it. And so the AI thing, while the execution of the task is now automated, what that does is that the human, because of the array of tasks that can be done by AI is so vast, now a human's breadth of coverage of expertise across those things also needs to be vast. So there's still a ton of stuff out there for humans to be able to understand and be good at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also, the people who trust the data and leverage the data to help them be, I mean, honestly, do their job faster, be more effective, more efficient, are the ones that they're literally going to leave the other reps behind. They'll get so much more accomplished in a day. And I think their sales cycles will start shortening because it's almost like having a business advisor telling you what to do and how to do it. And you have to go still do that. But if you start trusting and listening and executing on it, you will shorten your sales cycle. You will start getting, you know, larger transactions. You will improve your performance. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put some framing on the table here. I wrote a research paper a couple months ago about the future benchmarks for how sales executives spend their time. And if you look at a vast array of research right now, it's estimated that it's only about 20% of the time are sales executives spending in meaningful conversations with customers. About 20%. Well, what's the rest of it? It's all the grunt work we've been talking about, right? Oh, I got to do a forecast. Oh, I got to read this thing. Oh, I got to put my data, or maybe not, in the CRM, right? It's all that bullshit, right, that they got to do. They're down to 20%. So I did some analysis. We looked at different use cases, and our assertion at TSIA was, look, bare minimum, AI is going to double that. In other words, you know, reps should be having 40, close to 50% of their time is spent in these strategic, meaningful conversations with customers. And, you know, back to what you said, Chris, it's that's when those human skills are going to be super important, because, you know, the customer is going to be like, you know, help me, you know, Thomas, you know, explain why I'm buying this and I want to have confidence in this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm doing that. That's what I'm spending my time on. That's what I'm really, really good at. And so I think it's a world where, you know, the goodness is they can be way more strategic, you know, even more value, but they're not going to get there to what you're saying, Chad, unless they really embrace leveraging the tools to take that grunt work out.
I thought you were going to say 30, 70. What we're seeing internally, it's literally flipped.
Yeah, flips.
70% of the time they're out selling, and we are big proponents of face-to-face.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the human aspect that Chris was talking to, and the 30% is now just the minor things they have to do because how much...
Well, if it flips that way, I mean, the analysis I did, I was being conservative, but doubling is massive. Doubling the quality time that people can spend is a huge benefit. And, you know, Chris, I want to go back to something that you put on the table about this fork in the road for sales organizations, right? Where they either say, I'm going to keep doing it the way I've been doing it for 30 years, CRM, enter my data, or I'm going to have a different strategy here, right? On how I get data, what I do with that data. I believe in that fork in the road. I think that it's getting close to the point of insanity to think you're going to be able to just keep doing it the old way. Yet, that's still probably the majority of the sales organizations. So talk a little bit about the tipping point. Like, how do you get sales leaders to realize, to have really the oh shit moment where it's like, you're right, I can't keep doing it the old way. What helps them get over that hump and realize that this is non-negotiable. It's just non-negotiable.
Well, nothing motivates a sales leader like missing the number.
Yeah, there's truth to that.
And or maybe the better thing is nothing motivates a sales leader like losing to your competition. And so here's what I would tell people. By the way, so Chad and I used to spend, I don't know, a third of our week, a quarter to a third of our week doing forecasting, right? Mm-hmm. We do one forecast meeting a week now. It's an hour. No reps are harmed during the process because we just, the AI tells us, boom, here's a stack rank of your biggest deals with risk. And the AI tells us what the risk is and suggests what we should go do about it. Mm-hmm. And the rest of our week is spent doing those things.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
We were literally just talking about that before we
like
got
literally
on.
Literally right before we were like, okay, yeah, we got to do the risk, that, you know, like, yeah.
Think about, we were laughing, like, think about you have a one-on-one that takes at least an hour, and you're trying to interpret the story they're telling you. I'm going to say sometimes lies, like the story lies they're telling you.
Right.
Actually, where are we at? What's the risk? And what do we tactically need to do to move forward? Or should we just not even take this deal? Shouldn't even be in the forecast or the pipeline? It's so hard to do that. And most leaders have, would you say 6-7 reps, sometimes even more these days? Think about that 7-8 hours and then try and interpret what they told you. Come up with it with an accurate projection of what's really going to happen.
And then you spend your whole weekend worrying about, did you miss it or did you get it right or whatever. But Thomas, going back to your original question, which is what'll motivate sales leaders, I guess I'll just say this, because Chad and I were just talking about this, that meant we were looking at our pipeline. And so when I look at the names of the companies in our pipeline, and then I assume, by the way, of course we have competitors and so they have their own pipeline. So across all of us, let's just say there are, I don't know, over 1,000 companies represented in our combined pipelines. Okay. And those companies spread across, I will tell you, the vast majority of vertical industries now. Everything from financial services to healthcare to manufacturing to telcos to software companies to on and on and on and on. Okay. So if you're a sales leader and you're sitting at home thinking, my industry or my slice of this pie is exempt from this, it's risk free in this area, I will tell you, you should think twice about that assumption.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So going back to what motivates us, if your competitors are going to do this, bare minimum, they're going to be way more efficient. And efficiency usually begets better production. And so you just got to be cognizant of that.
One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free. Yeah, I mean, the story I'll tell on that, over the years, we did a lot of work on what we called as-a-service transformation. So that's traditional software company or hardware company moving from on-prem, customer owns it as an asset versus SaaS or subscription type models, right? And that's a big business model change. And as that was working through multiple industries, we did have members that said, that's just never going to happen because my customers just never will consume that way. And we kept saying, I don't know, you know, there's a lot of benefits to that way and a lot of other industries have tipped. Well, you know, that eventually kind of ate through almost every industry out there, right? The same thing is happening with AI. And believe it or not, I've spoken to members who say kind of what you're chipping on, Chris. They're like, well, my customers have told me they don't want us to deploy AI with them, and that they're cautious and they're nervous. So they got all these reasons, all these excuses why they don't really have to look at that yet or right now. And I'm telling them, look, when the customers realize the efficiencies that they should be getting because you deployed AI or they deployed AI, they're going to force you into this. So the sooner you get your head wrapped around this, like I agree with you, there's no industry that is immune to this. And it is still, it's shocking to me, again, how we'll go back to sales organizations, how many sales organizations just don't have their head wrapped around that yet.
I think we could actually, all of us that are, you know, have AI application solution products, I think we can help because people believe AI is a black box. And the more we help them understand how data is collected and combined and how recommendations come forward and they start understanding what's behind or inside the black box, they'll be more comfortable with it. But it's really up to us to be able to help them do that, right? If they don't do that, they're still going to feel this way, right?
That's why, Thomas, yesterday I gave our team the advice or the coaching, go spend however much time you need to every week, not becoming experts necessarily just in our solutions, but in what's happening in the AI space. Because if I'm a buyer and somebody shows up trying to sell me something and they're not an expert in that thing, that's a non-starter for me.
Yep, I agree with that. You know, back to this motivation issue for sales leaders, I think, again, we're like preaching to the choir to each other here on this. We really believe this is non-negotiable to start leaning into these tools. The other potential catalyst I see here to force the hand of sales organizations is this reality that there, again, sales is on the operating table. And I've seen many companies where the sales leadership is given the edict to say, look, we expect you to be more efficient. And so we're reducing headcount now on the front end. Either, you know, we're flattening hiring or we're taking 10% out, 15% out, and we expect you to get leverage. And that conversation is coming to sales leaders. And so again, you need to be ahead of that, not the victim of that, right? Because if you think that your CEO or CFO or board isn't going to be asking you to be more efficient and effective with your sales dollars, you're crazy. They're absolutely that conversation. And I'm curious if you guys are seeing that unfold within your customers as well, that the expectance that, you know, hey, we are going to be, you should be more efficient with sales.
I have seen, it's interesting. I mean, Chris and I have the opportunity to meet with a lot of different leaders and CROs across the industries. And the one thing that's happened in the last, I'd say, month and a half is when they start opening up to us, saying, I've got to go back to the board or I got to go to the executive team and explain how I'm going to leverage AI.
Yes.
Specific processes.
Yeah, right.
What do you recommend? How do you recommend to start? And what's some examples of how I can do that? But that is happening. I'm surprised.
It is happening.
A month and a half.
For sure.
The other nuance there is that it's also probably in some ways contributing to the adoption challenges, right? Because I think the conclusion that people draw when they hear us people, leaders, the industry talking about this efficiency thing and staffing and whatnot is that it will result in job losses. And sure, I'm sure there'll be some of that. Okay. Like, and I'm not trying to minimize that. But for many, many, many leaders out there, what they're trying to do is improve productivity, keep the people they have, and improve the productivity of those people. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge mindset change, right? If I'm asked to use a technology and the implication is use of that technology actually creates risk for me versus use of that technology will actually improve my results, a human being is going to react way differently to those two options. Okay? And I will say, like, most of the leaders, the vast majority of leaders I talk to, they're pursuing the latter. Like, how do I take the team today I have today and make them better, faster, stronger, more productive? Yes, I'm sure at the other end of that, there will be some job losses. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to play that out, and this conversation has come up many times on this podcast, and I'm a very candid person here on these topics, and I've watched a lot of leadership teams dance around the impact AI is going to have on jobs. They just dance around it. And they say, oh, it's just rainbows and unicorns, and it's just going to make everybody more productive. And, you know, I think the reality is, and we already see it, AI is allowing companies to do one of two things, either slow down headcount growth, because what you're on, Chris, just making who I have more productive so I can keep growing with the same employee base, or actually trim You know, that's happening. That's a reality. And it is making knowledge workers just way more productive. Having said that, again, for people listening in what you said, Chris, you know, people are going to be more receptive to the fact that, hey, it's making me better. I'm more excited about that than, hey, this may cost me my job. Is an individual professional or an individual sales leader, you have to embrace this. You can't sit there and say, well, I'm just kind of ignore this because I think it's going to cost. That's definitely going to cost your job. If you're a sales leader and you
just said what I was trying to say way better. Thank you. So somebody once told me, I don't know, I read it somewhere or whatever. Hey, when you wake up every day, you get to choose to be happy that day.
Okay.
I think that carries over to the AI world. When you wake up every day, you get a choice. Can I use AI to improve my performance and productivity to a point where I have to be a part of this organization?
Mm-hmm.
Or you can wake up every day and choose, I refuse to participate in that. And I think that's a far riskier bet. I would encourage everybody. By the way, some of this stuff is really cool and fun. Like, it's brought joy to parts of my job that I didn't even know existed. So part of the reason to do this is just because it's cool and fun. But the other part is, it's a way better career move to embrace this stuff, use it to improve your productivity, and become a rock star employee.
There's a mantra that I've said on the main stage many times for now going on 2 years. I say, look, everybody in this, you know, listening, this is what you have to think every morning. AI may not replace my job, right? It may not, but it definitely will change the way I work. And you have to believe that. I mean, everybody has to wake up and I think lean into that. And to, you know, just to build on what you said, Chris, just me personally as a researcher, it's completely revolutionized the way I work, just like it's changed the way you guys work. And it's awesome. I mean, it's just like, there is a lot of there to get excited about as a professional. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And so, you know, while I'm watching the clock here, I want to end on a positive note. I'm just curious, as you two look forward, what are you most excited about when you look at the capabilities, you know, that your company's working on and how it changes sales? Is there any sort of, you know, emerging futures that you guys are super pumped about?
You know, it's a good question. I just look at the productivity savings and all the things that we're all doing manually that AI is going to help us actually do and eliminate and make us so much smarter. One of the things, we're alluding to forecast accuracy earlier, Chris, we were talking about that. And I mean, I think it's great to share the example of us coming to People AI. I mean, think about all the different companies you and I have worked at. And here's a real life example. So, and I think it'll be even more in the future accelerated. So we think about all the hours we spent trying to come up with a forecast that we alluded to. When we first got here and we talked to RevOps, Chris and I were laughing about this. They literally said, okay, here's your forecast. And think about that. We're like, well, wait a minute. I need to spend hours talking to reps and coming up with my own art or my own spin on it. And I mean, the things it can do to help you and actually predict kind of the future of what's going to happen and give you a chance to alter that future in a way that you've never done before is actually here. And it's going to keep even expanding beyond that. Right?
Yeah. I agree with Chad. I mean, that's like the right here, right now in front of us. Okay. So what Chad just walked through is we do it every week. We've been here, Chad's just over a year. I'm the year mark. So that's a proven AI capability. I'll jump to like a little bit of the future. So we get asked by customers a lot, well, I've got this data here in CRM and in People AI, and then I've got this other thing over here that's like how much customers spend on different product lines, different industries, and then I've got this other like product marketing collateral product database over here. Can you guys tell me for this territory, what products to go sell to which customers and why? Like, why the pattern? Like, that's here. This ability, I referred to it earlier, is using the protocol, like the name of the protocol, which is MCP. But this thing of allowing agents to talk to one another. I don't mean human agents. I mean agentic AI.
Right.
So you take two agents, four agents. You take basically a parent agent or a primary agent that can go run this query across multiple different agentic interfaces and build this thing. Like, that's here. And that's if you took an individual sales rep and said, here's your territory, go do this manually and come back to me with your sales plan for the year.
Yeah.
I would take a human being weeks to do that. And and this set of combined agents can do it in a matter of minutes.
Yeah. And just to kind of close the loop to what you said earlier, Chris, you know, if for sales reps listening, again, if you say, well, you know, that's what I got paid to do. So like, that's my job is going away, what you described. But the reality is after the AI agents do all that work, you as a rep have to understand those recommendations so that when you go pitch them, you can't just say, well, this is what the AI bot told me, you know, here's the answer. So there's still, you know, a lot of strategic work to be done there, and still the rep plays a critical role in, but it does just take up all that front end grunt work out of the equation, which is
great. You brought up account plans earlier and how miserable it is building account plans. This is a great example. I view the value in my sellers not in building the account plan. I view their value in executing the account plan.
For sure.
So let's have the humans do that part and let the AI do the hard part, the grunt work part that, frankly, the humans don't want to do anyway.
Yeah. You know, if we could put a bullet in the head of PowerPoint presentations that took hours and hours and hours, I mean, how many reps would celebrate that? I mean, seriously. Hey,
we're trying one PowerPoint slide at a time. We're trying.
God. How many account review decks do you have to create, right? And, well, hey, I really appreciate you guys coming in today. I think this is a really important topic for our audience because these sales leaders and sales organizations have got to just jump on this. There's just, we're completely convinced of that. I know you guys are. And I always end these podcasts with a question of the day. And so my question for the audience is your sales organization a laggard or a leader when it comes to leveraging AI to drive revenue? Cheers, everybody. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence.